The Pasco County DEC is providing this podcast as a public service in order to let you know more about the issues and ideas which Democrats have identified as being very important for voters, and also to provide a forum for Democratic candidates for office. Our podcasts are open to anyone interested in how Pasco Democrats are dealing with the important issues of the day. You can check out our PascoDems.com website and also on Facebook, Pasco Dems, and the views expressed by the guest and host on our podcast are their own, and not the official views of the Pasco County Democratic Party or Democratic Executive Committee. So today's podcast guest is Wilson Blount, Democratic activist who's had quite an interesting background in his life. And so the first I'm going to ask is this, Wilson, tell us where you came from and some of the most important things that happened to you as you were growing up. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, I was born in Randolph County, Georgia, son of sharecroppers, and I went to public schools there. One of the first things I recall about politics was early on, I guess I must have been 6 years old thereabouts, a person running for a local sheriff came to visit my dad. We were sitting on the front porch. I was sitting on the steps. And this gentleman jumps out of his car, had a container in his hand, walks up the stairs, presents to my dad, and says, "Terry," to my dad's name, "I hope I can count on your vote for sheriff." And my dad looked at this and he said, "Is this all you're going to give me for my vote?" It was a quart jar of moonshine.
Oh, wow.
and the guy looked at my dad in total disbelief and jumped in his car, drove off, and with minutes came back with a full gallon. And then he said to my dad, "You think I got your vote now?" And my dad says, "I don't know. I'll think about it." So he stormed off, man, dusted down the road. That's when it first occurred to me that this thing called a vote is worth something. Yeah. You know, and what's that all about?
Yeah.
And I started talking to my dad about it, and he didn't put much emphasis on it. "Oh, boy, go and play, shoot your marbles." And that was my introduction to politics at the local level.
Okay, and certainly in that state where you were born, the black experience was quite difficult, right?
Oh, Lord, absolutely. I don't remember any blacks, shall we say, in middle class when I was growing up. Most of us were dirt poor farmers, sharecroppers. That was their lot in life, not having much. And not thinking there was much to be had.
Mm-hmm.
So there was not much of looking down the road and see what's in this world for me. Until you got much older and you start going to school and you start reading books and thinking about learning about life in other parts of the country, these kinds of things. So then you start looking around and say, maybe there's something better here. Mm-hmm. That I would wake up and see what's going on around me.
Now, what was your experience in school like? Let's say high school. Did you go to a school that had whites as well, or was it primarily a black school?
It was primarily and totally black. We got hand-me-down books.
Uh-huh.
And I remember looking in the front book. In those days, you had to write your name in the book, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And I look at it and say, "Oh, this is the name. This must be the son of the local guy who runs the local newspaper. Not newspaper, but drugstore."
Uh-huh.
And it turned out, yeah, that was the son of the.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when you graduated from high school, what did you then do?
Okay, graduated high school in 1962, graduated high school and then went off to Tuskegee, Alabama, where I majored in business management. In those days, 1962, everyone, all the males, had to enroll in ROTC.
Right.
And I chose Air Force ROTC over the Army because rumors at that time was that there was a war going on in Vietnam, and I thought, well, I didn't want to go as an Army troop, so if I'm going, I'm going as an Air Force guy.
Okay. And now when you tell us a little bit about your experience in that conflict.
Well, I actually didn't actually go to Vietnam. I was commissioned in January 1967, and I went off to Canada. And my job in Canada was to sit alert, nuclear alert with the Canadians.
Uh-huh.
The Canadians had the airplanes, and we had the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
We had what was called an air-to-air defense weapon, and this weapon was designed to shoot down the Russian bombers as they came to attack America from the east, primarily
right.
East Coast, and we were pretty good at that. Didn't shoot down any, but we were there waiting for them.
Now, again, I don't mean to do this all completely from the black point of view, but it is part of our life and so forth, and particularly still these days. But your experience in the Air Force then, was it more of a positive one or what?
I would think it would be positive, although there were some occasions where there were definitely incidents of racial discrimination, these kinds of things. I do remember... when I was in Canada, as a matter of fact, I was there when sitting alert when Martin Luther King was shot on April the 4th, 1968, I believe it was.
Right.
And right after that, the Canadians came to me and said, hey, look, you guys, you African-Americans down there in America not being treated, like the African-Americans are up here in Canada.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? And I said, well, for one thing, there are not as many African-Americans in Canada as there are in America. So there's a different exposure to different threat.
Yeah.
I don't think the Canadians see what you have up here is what 0.5% black as a threat to you guys, to the white Canadians, whereas in America, I forgot, we were what, maybe 1.8%, 1.9%, and we were sort of concentrated in the South and the Northeast. So people felt threat, at least white America felt threat when they look out that door and see black Americans, which
right.
is not necessarily the case here in Canada.
Now, how long were you in the service?
Well, I was on active duty for 10 and a half years. And I was in the reserve for another 19 years, so I wore my uniform for about 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I served time, and I stayed in Canada, Spain, Taiwan, and traveled all over the place. Speaking of Spain, I was stationed in Torrejon, Spain, Madrid, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was walking down the hallway, and in the other end of the hallway, there was this white major who yelled at the top of his voice, "Tell that nigger boy," I said, "come here."
Ah.
And I thought, oh my God.
Yeah.
This can't be real. And I was sure somebody wouldn't talk to that major and let him know that that was conduct unbecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a day or two, I never heard, never saw anything. So I quietly went to visit him one afternoon, and he said, "Yeah, well, Blood, what can I do for you?" I said, "Do you, sir, remember? I was a captain, he was a major, so you had to pay your due respect."
Yeah.
So I said to him, "Do you recall what you said in the hall the other day?" He said, "Well, no, I don't. What was it all about?" And I repeated to him what he said. He said, "Oh, no, I never said that." And I said, "Do you want to walk next door and ask our secretary if she heard it?" I'd already discussed with her, so she would bear witness. "Oh," he said, "let me." I said, "No, dude." He was dumbfounded. He couldn't believe he said that. Then it occurred to me, these old boys say stuff without even thinking about it sometimes.
Yeah.
And I discussed with him. He apologized to me. Said he would apologize to the airman. I don't know if he ever did. But in any way, I confronted him with it. And I felt sorry that I had to do that. But I felt an obligation to get it done. Yeah. And we turned out to be pretty good friends after that. We went to breakfast and lunch a couple times.
Yeah.
So we remained, I guess you would say, friends.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because the one thing, and I've only told a couple of people in my life about this, but in high school, I developed quite an interest in a small town in northern New York State. I mean, we only had like 800 people in the town, but we had a central school, so a lot of kids came in there. And I liked badminton a great deal. But there was a young fellow, a black boy, who came up each September and stayed with one of the people in town for the school year, and then he'd return. His name was Boylan. And Boylan and I became very close friends. And among other things, we used to sneak into the school on Sundays and play badminton to our heart's content on the court, and then, you know, sneak back out. Nobody ever knew about it. One day we were having, I don't know, class in physics or something, and I've forgotten now exactly what happened. But somebody started saying, "Eeny, meeny, miny, moe," and I finished it. "Catch a nigger by the toe." And when I suddenly realized, Boylan turned and looked at me, and I looked at him, and something then happened. We were never close after that. Oh, you know, in my whole life, I've always sat back up. I wish I'd had a chance to speak with him in later years to try to square things a bit. But I know exactly what it is, because I think for a lot of us growing up, we never felt certain things, but something would trigger. You'd hear something, and automatically you'd say something. And, you know, without thinking, you would do that. Anyway.
That's true. You're absolutely right. And I said that's the way it unfolds most of the time.
Yeah. So now let's see. We're in the service now. At what point did you become interested in politics?
Well, I guess I got interested in politics when I arrived at Tuskegee in August and September 62. As I said, I grew up in a small farming community in Georgia, mm-hmm. and politics, at least from the black person mind, was not high on their agenda.
Oh, yeah.
In those days. You were just survival, I guess, was the thing to do at the time. But when I get to Tuskegee, well, even on the farm in Georgia, we got the farming magazines and mm-hmm. newspaper, Atlantic Journal Constitution, was sort of advanced newspaper. They didn't read it, but you sort of read it because, but anyway, I get to Tuskegee, and they have in the libraries and the student union newspapers of all sorts, magazines, and you read them, and you discuss with your classmate, your roommate, and people in the hallway, you just thought, oh my God, all this is going on.
Yeah.
What's this all about? Mm-hmm. You sort of heard about Martin Luther King marching here, the students sitting in Woolworths cafeterias and all that stuff. But when you were trying to survive on the farm, George, that's way out there, you know. You didn't worry about that. But now, here you are, people discussing this in the morning breakfast and lunch cafeteria, mm-hmm. and it's the central part of your life, you know. And so now you thought, well, hey, I've got to get involved in this. And then they said, well, you know, we're going down to Lowndes County, Alabama next week or next weekend, and we're going to register voters. Why don't you go? It's, oh, mm-hmm. my God. Mm-hmm. So I got involved in voter registration, and then there's a call out to join Martin Luther King in some of his protests. He's nonviolent, right?
Yeah.
So now, if you want to march with Martin Luther King in his group, you had to vow nonviolence. And I thought, what's this nonviolence thing? People are being beaten. I'm not going to be none. So they said, okay, you want to march, you have to go down here and become, go to nonviolence training.
Hmm.
And so I went off to Montgomery, Dexter Street Avenue Baptist Church, and we sat around there for a day or two. I don't remember how long, but we got nonviolent. We had to, you know, simulate being hit and fall on the floor and not fight back, mm-hmm. and these kinds of things. So that's when I really got started in the civic actions and voter registration and these kinds of feeding the hungry and the poor, tutoring.
Now, I know you've mentioned in the past about your Selma experience and so forth, so let's just spend a couple of minutes, though, talking about that experience for you. How important was it and so forth?
Okay, well, the Selma experience, as I said, we had been to Montgomery, and we had the nonviolence training. So we had the training, and at the time, I was a student, and I was working my way through school, so I didn't have the funds to devote full time to civil rights activity like a lot of the students did. So after I got my training, marching and all that, I went back to campus and went to work and went to study. And then the call came, okay, now we need to get serious about protesting civil rights. We want to get, we've been registering people to vote, but not voting. So now here's your chance to pass law so that they can make it easier to vote. Mm-hmm. So then, that was a Martin Luther King, and people were getting ready to march across the bridge in Selma. So, okay, that was going to be Sunday, March the 7th, I believe the date was. So myself and some other students boarded the bus. What was it? Sunday morning, the day of the march, mm-hmm. and we went across the bridge and hook up with the people in the church and march back across the bridge. Mm-hmm. Well, we arrived at the bridge thinking the bus would just go right across. Well, that did not happen. Mm-hmm. They stopped us and said, you can't cross the bridge because the bridge been closed and all that. So you have to turn around and go back to Tuskegee. So, no, don't think so. We can't march. Well, no, the patrolman said, park your bus down here if you want, but you're not crossing the bridge. Uh-huh. So we stood aside and thought, well, in a minute now, they'll relent and let us cross the bridge. Never did. So then the marchers started crossing the bridge, and they say the rest is history.
Yeah.
That was my beginning with it, kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about what it is to be. Why are you a Democrat?
Well, that's a good question. That goes back to my time in on the farm there. I guess it just said my dad, I'm not quite sure what my mom's thought was on this, but my dad, when he did talk politics, business, anything, it was always about things that, you know, poor people need, and they have to have these kinds of things, and to get them, you have to do this. But he never said what his registration was. Mm-hmm. I guess it was my dad and I wasn't terribly close, so we didn't spend a lot of time talking about it.
Yeah.
So then when I went to Tuskegee again, my eyes opened up to politics, and then I said, I think I registered for the first time as a student in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, you have to pick one or the other here. Pick whatever it's going to be. And most of the students there, my roommate, all my professors were Democrats, and they were talking things that I believed in. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, Jesus Christ, you're a Democrat and you believe this. And again, now I got all these things in the articles and the newspapers, editorials here and editorials there. And they were identifying themselves as Republicans or Democrats, and everything I sort of believed in, this person called a Democrat was believing in this. So I guess you could say I took the path that took me down the road to what I thought mm-hmm. was what I believed in, and these mm-hmm. people believed in it. And the newspaper I like sort of advocated Democratic points of views, and so I became a Democrat based on, okay. I guess you could say, what I believed and what the people around me believed in.
Okay. Now, let's talk about this, the pros and cons of Democrats that you have experienced in your career as a Democrat. What things have been good and what things have been bad as far as you're concerned?
Well, the good things are, going back now, I think in 1962, I believe Kennedy was a Democrat,
right.
and his opponent was Republicans, and even the people in and around me that I could see, people that were supporting voter rights and things for, not necessarily all black, but poor people, mm-hmm. It seemed to me, were Democrats. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, you know, if you want to make the best for you and your people, the Democrats are the one that's fighting for you.
Okay.
Certainly in the newspapers and all that, is. I could see where many Republicans, although now in the Civil Rights March now yeah. across the bridge, I think there were some Republicans in the march across the bridge, but most of those were not politicians that yeah. I could see. Those were Republicans who were you say, white college educated and people mm-hmm. along those lines.
Yeah.
So I don't remember anybody fighting for me at the time that were elected politicians.
So if you were the person sitting down and saying, okay, I got a piece of paper here, and on one side I'm saying the good things Democrats have done, on the other side the bad things that they've done, what would you put down on the bad side, if anything?
On the bad side would be those boys from the Carolinas, like Strom Thurmond in that crowd, that were strong advocates of segregation.
Right.
Not for unions, that kind of thing. They were all mostly for corporations. The Republicans were. I'm sure there must have been some would have voted and advocated for the black person and the unions and all that. But none of them stood out to me. Mm-hmm. Certainly didn't ring any bell to get my, didn't ask my vote or my people's vote. That comes to mind would be George Wallace in Alabama. You remember George Wallace in Alabama at the time. To me, he was the ultimate white Republican politician.
Yeah.
And it was a bad case. Anybody who cared about the country and the people would not see George Wallace as an advocate for a black and middle class.
Okay. Now, we've got two big elections coming up, 2022 and 2024. Now, if you were in charge of the local Pasco County Democrats, what would you be telling us to do?
I would be telling you to get out there and every day, if you have to, stand on the corner and register people to vote. Mm-hmm. We have got the Republicans are outnumbering us in votes and getting people to the poll. I would think the first thing we would do is right now find out who moved into this state that is not registered and knock on that door and call. I hate to think of the number of pieces of correspondence I have received here in my mailbox. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess phone call and text messages and email.
Mm-hmm.
I think we as local Democrats have got to attack this voter registration rolls here. Mm-hmm. That would be my priority: get people registered to vote and then raise money to get back to buy some airtime.
Okay, now. Today, we'll stop it there, but I would just remind you that I'll probably want to talk to you again, particularly as we get closer to election time and see what your thoughts are at that point. But in the meantime, once I just say that I'll stop, I want to thank you for the time and so forth, and I appreciate it very, very much, and thanks for being with us.